Hey, what's up? You're listening to the Coffee Can't Fix Everything podcast. This is a show about mental health over a cup of coffee. Now, I know coffee's great, but it can't fix all life struggles. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and listen to these great conversations. Enjoy. Can't fix everything. This is the podcast where we talk about mental health over a cup of coffee. Today I got the homie, super artistic, loving the vibe. I've always loved your vibe, dog. Like, it's been so cool. Mr. Austin Neal. Austin, thank you so much for being here, man.
Absolutely, man. It's a good time. It's a good spot to do it. So happy to be here.
Yeah. So I know when you reached out to me, you know, when we were doing this, you know, second season, you're really wanting to talk about mental health from the aspect of our youth,
which
I think is so important. Talk a little bit about, like, what is your what are you seeing? You know, how are you involved with the youth, and tell me about that. What are you seeing?
Yeah, man, it's so yes, I've been involved with the youth for a while now. I want to say probably roughly since about 2016 2017. Mm-hmm. I've been involved somehow, some way, in some shape or form. My mom, she actually used to run her own in-home daycare for most of my life. So growing up, there's always seven or eight other kids around me. And so I think my affinity for serving the youth or serving others besides myself, you know, grew from that. But roughly about 2016-2017 era, I was kind of lost, to be honest, you know, trying to figure out who I was. Who my identity was placed in, whether it was in the world or in Christ or myself or baseball at the time. You know, so, and when I placed a lot of my identity in baseball, throughout my high school and middle school career, but, I got sick, and we were just talking about this a little bit ago, but, I eventually got sick with ulcerative colitis and, had to quit baseball altogether. And so when that happened, I was like, well, who am I? You know? And I did a lot of soul searching and a lot of conversations with my parents and just friends around me, people I trusted. And at the time, you know, we grew up in church and everything, but at the time I kind of walked away from it. Wasn't really clicking with God and clicking with church and all that. But my mom, she was like, well, you know, you've tried everything at this point. Talk to a pastor and see what he says. I'm like, I don't want to talk to any pastor, but okay. So I ended up talking to Pastor Jeremy out in West Des Moines, Lutheran Church of Hope. And he gave me some really good insight that I've never forgotten. I still remember to this day. And that really was, you know, try serving others before yourself. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see. What are you talking about, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, well, have you ever thought about serving youth or serving homeless or serving really anybody outside of your circle of people or right. people that you know already? So I'm like, well, no, of course not. I've never really thought of that, you know, because I've always been taught or told, you know, you got to work on yourself first and make sure you're 100% and go out and do what you got to do. And I think there is some validity to that still, but I also do think that through serving, you find yourself and you find who you really are meant to be. You know, we look at Jesus and he serves like crazy. He's the ultimate servant, you know. But then he's got people around him that also serve. And because of that, they're a team and they're working together and for the betterment of the world. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, yeah, so I met with him and it was like, okay, whatever, I'll try it, you know, try whatever at this point too. And so he got me plugged in with a couple different areas. And one of those is called The Landing, out in West Des Moines at Lutheran Church of Hope as well. And that is basically a recovery program for ages 13 to 18. So middle schoolers to high schoolers. And I've been doing that for probably about 7 years now, coming up on 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
This is a full-time or / part-time volunteer. But we meet every single week. You know, new groups of kids a lot of times, you know, based on the school calendar. So we got kids that graduate and move away, but we have a lot of kids that stay with us through their entire high right. school career. So, and then a lot of times some of them come back and lead as well. But what that's really focused is on, it's obviously the betterment of them. And, you know, we have kids coming in from, you know, struggling with drugs, struggling with alcohol, struggling with abuse, trauma. I mean, you name it. And we probably have a kid that has struggled with that. But a lot of them, you know, they're going through the rehab. They're going through, you know, trying to get better. And they're lost a little bit. I mean, I would be, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot to, it's heavy to take on as middle school and high school age, you know, and their different family dynamics too can play a lot into that. But a lot of them are focused on the tangible. And so they're like, okay, I've been sober for 2 weeks and that's the longest I've been out, been sober.
Wow.
Or I've been sober for a day, you know, and that's as long as they can go. But what we'd like to do at the landing is, okay, let's cut a few layers back, you know, what's beneath all of that trauma, what's beneath all that hurt, what's beneath the struggle with alcohol, or the struggle with drugs or whatever. And it's a really good process to find out who they are again, you know, self-identification is huge. And, you know, obviously it's in a church, but, we don't push God and a lot of them don't believe in God even still. But we're going to preach what the Bible says. And right. if they make a connection, like, you know, let me try out God for a little bit and then so be it, you know, but if right. they don't, then so be it. But main goal is to help them get to where they want to be, or to where their parents want to be and to be healthy, you know, and to not have to rely on drugs or alcohol or right. a myriad of things, you know? So I've been doing that for about 7 years, to answer that question and long winded, but, yeah. but doing that, helped out, in the youth, the, homeless scene as well, with, the Joppa. And so I've been with them for probably about the same amount of time, about 7 years, maybe 8 years coming up now. And then I worked at Hyatt Middle School for a while as well, with the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, right on.
So we did a lot of work there. That was mainly programming and you know, after school and summer stuff. But again, it was a lot of conversations. A lot of the kids are hurting, you know. I think we had about 70 to 80% of our kids were living in poverty, at the time. And so with that comes trauma, and with that comes,
man.
You know, they got to be the man of the house at 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
Or they're raising their two other siblings or their mom or dad or whoever's at work. So, and then they got to come in for after school programming and be like, okay with everything.
And be okay,
you know?
With it. You yeah. said a few things I wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
One, your story is so similar to mine and a lot of people that I know who were athletes at some point.
Mm.
Once it stops, it's like, who am I?
Yeah.
I was the same with basketball, bro. I was like, I don't know. When I'm not playing ball and you go back home and people are just assuming, like, you still playing, you're not playing ball?
Mm.
And you're like, you have no identity.
Yeah.
That's what your identity was. Like, I wasn't Corey, I was a hooper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when you don't have that, it's like, it's so fun. It's not funny, but it's interesting to see that the patterns are so similar to where you're an athlete, you lose your identity, then you go down and, like, you got to find yourself through this darkness
yeah.
to get back to where you find, like, your new identity.
Mm.
And you also said something about, you were talking about these kids who are dealing with trauma and then having to act like everything's okay
yeah.
in front of people.
Yeah.
How do you approach that, those type of youth where you know there's some trauma, you know there's some things, but you want them to be open and honest, but you know there's a fine line.
Yeah,
how do you approach that situation?
Man, I mean, every situation is different, but a lot of the situations are very similar in the same breath,
right.
you know. And honestly, an easy answer to that, just love them well and hear them, you know, not just hear them, but listen to them. Because honestly, that's kind of the root of a lot of it, is they don't have anybody to listen to them, you know, and hear them and hear their needs and hear their wants and be there with them and for them, you know. I've had multiple conversations with kids at the school that was, you know, they're just broken down in tears, and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, well, it was a minor inconvenience situation, whatever it was, you know. And I'm like, that has you this upset that you're in tears, you know? And they're like, yeah, I don't know why, but it's just such a small minor thing to my eyes, but to them, it's the biggest thing in the world,
yeah.
You know? And so in that moment, it's how can I be there for that student or that youth, you know? And really it's, I just need to love them in this moment and sit there with them, listen to them. Let them get some things out. You know, I've had kids cuss me out. I'm like, get it out, man. Like, if it's not me, it's going to be a teacher, and they're going to get you in trouble, you know?
That's real.
Yeah, so get it out to me, because I'm listening, I'm taking to it. Yeah,
because you know they're whatever. Not cussing you out.
Yeah.
There's so much built-up frustration and sadness that they got to get it out somehow.
Yeah.
It's almost, you feel like you're their safe space. Like, hey, I'm the safe. Like, you can look that out with me.
Well, it's 100% it, because I wish I had that when I was their age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I'm sure I did, but I wasn't privy to it, you know? And I have my parents, of course, but there was also things that I didn't want to tell my parents at the time.
Or
same thing with the students that I've worked with, is they got their parents, they got teachers, but they don't want to tell this authoritative figure in their life that what's going on, you know? They'd rather tell somebody else that they still trust, but they know that they're not going to get in trouble or be looked at differently from the way they're feeling, you know, and going through their emotions. And I told the kids all the time, like, I still tell them, I told them last week, you know, I love to cry. Like, I'm such a crier at anything. You know, I could be thinking about, I think about my wife sometimes, and I'm just like, wow, I'm just, like, tearing up and just thinking about her and all the things she does for me. Or it's a serious thing where it's, I'm feeling so sick and I'm so at my wit's end at the moment, and it's my tears are real, you know?
Right.
And I tell them this, and I think that creates a, what am I trying to say? It drops down a barrier, maybe, that they've put up. They're like, well, you're an adult, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You have emotions maybe, but you never express them or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'm already like taking that down. I'm like, look, I cry all the time. I get upset all the time. I have emotions. And emotions aren't necessarily a bad thing.
No.
You know? It depends how you're going to react to them. You know, we taught the kids what's the difference between reaction and or reacting and responding. And it was a really cool conversation, because it opened up that door of, you know, what are we responsible for? And they're like, well, I guess we're responsible for the way that we react, right? And
right.
100%, you know? Like, we're responsible for our own emotions. We can't be responsible for somebody else's emotions. So if you're upset at somebody, how are you going to be in this moment? How are you going to react? Are you going to start, you know, throwing punches? Or are you going to go up to them, hey, so-and-so, this really hurt my feelings. Can we talk about it? You know, and it was really cool to see a lot of that maturity in these middle schoolers, you know, blossom. And they really got to be able to become in touch with who they are, but also their emotions and their more sensitive side of things.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see them break their own barriers down and act in such a mature way, you know?
Right. How long does that take for... Because when I think of myself in middle school, or even my own middle school, I would have to, like, torture them to get anything. How was school? Good. What'd you do? Math.
You know?
One word.
Yeah.
So to get them to say how they feel, I can only imagine what that would take.
Yeah.
Sometimes. You know, it would have to get to, like, a certain point where they would, like, just, you know, have no other choice but to express their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
What is that process like? Yeah, I know it feels good, but, like, what is that process like in the beginning when you're first seeing them and there's kind of that force field, or that they're on the defensive, right? But how long does that take for them to finally start to chip away and to really express themselves?
Honestly, it's really different from each student, you know, what I've seen. I think, again, the biggest thing goes back to that last question is, you know, how do I approach them? And it's, I have to love them first before anything. but more, not more importantly, but in the same stroke as you know, building that relationship and loving them well, is I need them to be able to trust me just as much as I need to be able to trust them. And so there's different things I've done in the past, you know, to build that trust. For example, with a student that we all kind of struggled with, it was how do we as a team, how do we kind of draw this student to trust us more, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, it was just like I had to be there for them and be there with them. And so anyways, we actually ended up going to a food pantry and volunteering with the kids. And we took about maybe a group of 10 or 15 of them, and this one student was with us, and they're struggling, you know, a little bit, you know, being there and kind of messing with their friends and whatnot. But you know, it's again, I need to be there for them. So, so what I did was kind of like, hey, why don't you hang out with me today and help me out? Cause I don't really know how to do this. And you've been here before and you've done this before. They're like, you can figure it out. You know how to do it. I'm like, no, I really don't. Like, I need your help. Like, help me figure this out. And so they finally gave in and they're like, okay, whatever, I'll help you out. And they did, and we had a lot of fun, you know, and we made it fun, but we got the job done, and I learned a lot, and he learned a lot, maybe, but going forward from that, we trusted each other in a different way that he didn't trust the other people. Right. And so he would come to me first to tell me what was going on, or he's like, hey, Austin, I'm really upset today, or I'm really mad at so-and-so. Can you, like, not put us together in rooms? I'm like, thanks for telling me. Absolutely. Yeah. You know? So yeah, it's as far as like, how long does it take? I don't know. You know, it could be a conversation where the, where it's like instant, or it's multiple conversations, or it's multiple interactions, or multiple weeks or multiple months, you know? I still have students that I think about that. I don't know if they trust me, but that relationship is still there, you know, it's still building every single day or every single time I see them. So it could be as quick as a day or a conversation, but it could also take months. It could also take years too.
Do you ever find yourself telling a kid something or like teaching them a lesson and then being like, ooh, I should probably take that advice myself?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Almost every time, you know? Yes. especially with the students that we deal with, at like the recovery age, or the recovery stage, I should say, you know, it's tough because I've never struggled with like drugs or alcohol, for example. And that's kind of a lot of what our students struggle with. However, I have family members or even some friends that do still struggle with those things. And so my perspective is kind of from the outside. But it's at a different angle that they might be expected from me. You know what I mean? Where, cause if I come in and I'm like, I've struggled with drugs, alcohol and whatever, you know, and they also have struggled with that, they instantly, there's a connection there. But if I say, yeah, I don't really struggle with any of that, but I have my own struggles, or I struggle with my health, or, you know, fill in the blank. That connection might not be as instant as it would have been if I shared that same struggle, you know? And so, but if I phrased it in a way of, I don't know where you're coming from. I have no idea what it's like to struggle with, you know, X, Y, Z, or drugs or alcohol, whatever. However, I do know what it is like to struggle with my own struggle. But even further, I do know what it feels like to be on the outside, having a family member or having a friend that does struggle with that.
Right.
And so I can give that perspective instead of at the recovery perspective, you know? So it's, I think it's a perspective that they don't expect most of the time, but it's also a perspective I don't think that they've received most of the time. Because it's usually people that have never struggled with, I don't want to say anything, but with drugs, alcohol, you know, with their struggle, it's either those conversations with those people, or it's conversations with people that are the professionals or therapists or counselors or anything like that, that have also never struggled with what they're struggling with. But put them in a group of people that struggle with the same thing. They are bouncing all ideas off each other, or like, well, this is what worked for me. This is what didn't work for me, you know? A lot of times, a lot of these conversations I have with these groups of students is me really just sitting back and letting them go, you know, and it's, I might facilitate a question here or there,
right.
But they take it and they're like, well, this works really well for me. Or,
which is important.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, cause at the end of the day, they're responsible for their own recovery and
right.
they're responsible for their own mental health and health overall, you know, I'm just there as a tool for them if they need
right.
it. So, yeah.
Do you ever find yourself, is it hard to separate their trauma and not take it home with you?
Man, yes, absolutely. Especially when I first started out too, that was really the biggest struggle for me was how do I, like, these kids come with some heavy stuff,
yo,
you know,
that's real.
As Pastor Brown says, heavy like a Chevy, you know, they do. They
yeah.
got some things to go that they're going through. And when I first started, it was, yeah, that separation was really hard, but it's also really crucial because I was taking it home every week, you know, with this recovery program. It was, you know, these kids are struggling with anything from gang violence to, again, drugs, alcohol, abuse by a parent. Or, I mean, we've had kids that have struggled with, you know, witnessing murder. I mean, it's like huge
yeah.
things, you know, that no 13 to 18, nobody should really go through that at all.
Right.
But let alone a 13, 18 year old, you know, dealing with that, that's huge. And it's traumatic, you know? And so for me, it was like, yeah, I was taking it home every single week. It's like, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know the separation. I don't know. So I had to talk with a lot of people and be like, how do you guys do this? You know, you've been doing
yeah.
it longer than me. How do you not take things home? And a lot of really what it was is, you know, they would have these conversations in the place, in the time span that we allocated for. And they made it a rule to kind of leave it there, you know, and mm-hmm. not take it home. It's easier said than done.
Easier said
you
than
know?
Done, yeah.
But for me, what ended up really was helping was a lot of prayer. Like we do a cleansing prayer every week with this recovery program. Again, because a lot of these kids come in with some heavy stuff and, you know, whether it's, you want to call it demonic or not, but it's tough. You know, we've got kids that have claimed to see, like, demons and like the devil and like dark stuff, man.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. But and a lot of them, you know, whether it's they're coming off drugs or alcohol and they see these things, or you know, whether it's just an imbalance in their brains going on, it's still pretty real, and we gotta deal with it as real as it
yeah,
is
it's,
as
it's
you know
moment. Yeah.
yeah. So because of that, we kind of like, we got our, it's like our protection plan, you know, it's our cleansing prayer every week and kind of just cleanses our souls, cleanses our minds and our spirits. And, you know, really essentially what it does is leaves everything at the foot of the cross and be like, okay, Jesus, this is for you to deal with now. We've done our part. This is on you. And you've already known what's going on anyways. So,
right.
So we leave it at the foot of the cross for you to deal with. And
yeah.
he does every time, you know, so. That's really helped me at least separate it from my brain to Jesus, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So that's been crucial.
Man, I can only imagine some of the stories that you've been told.
Man, yeah.
Have there been any kind of sketchy situations that you've been in? Before I ask that question, I have another question I've been
okay.
dying to ask you too, and it's around mentorship. We hear a lot of youth talk about, we understand, not here, but a lot of the conversation is there are a lot of our kids that are struggling with mental health,
mm-hmm.
Have traumatic backgrounds and experiences,
yeah.
but where are the people to serve these kids? Has this been something that you've experienced with the organizations that you work with, like not having enough people to support them? And if so, how are you working through that? And even what are your thoughts on mentorship and being there for you?
Yeah. I think short answer is yes. Like it is hard to find people. But also another short answer, no. You know, it's
uh-huh.
like, there are people there that are available. I think it's, I don't want to say the right people, but people that are equipped, you know, because I mean, you could place anybody in what we do week in, week out. I think the biggest thing, the biggest reason why it is successful, why it is what it is because of the relational equity that we have with these students, you know? And so anytime, because there are new volunteers that come in, and so every time we have a new volunteer or a new face even, they're just checking it out for the night and not ever going to be there again, you know? Even then, with a lot of new people, all the kids are like, who's that? What's their story? You know, or like, I don't know. We'll ask them. You know, like, I haven't even talked to them yet. So go talk to them. But they're very cautious with who they are around and who they tell things to, especially traumatic experiences. You know,
right.
So it goes back to that trust and relational equity and like when I first started, I didn't know any of the students and. I felt like, you know, imposter syndrome, like, I shouldn't be here. I don't struggle with any of these things that these kids deal with, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so going into that was, like, it was hard for me, but I just hung out with them and got to know them and kept showing up. And that's another huge thing is consistency
yes.
is key, you know what I mean? Like, we hear it all the time, and as cliche as it sounds, it's so true, especially in a kid's life.
Yeah.
A lot of our kids struggle with abandonment issues, too. And, you know, it's, they could be, like I said earlier, like kind of the man of the house at that point in life where, you know, mom left, dad left, grandma left, grandpa left, or whoever left. And that has a traumatic factor on their life. And so they're playing grown up at 13, 14, 15, you know.
Right.
And so, I don't know, to go back to the people coming in, it's never a question of enough people. It's a question of who's right, who's the fit, who's the right fit,
right.
You know, because we've had several people come in and never show up again. And it's like, well, how can you expect to go anywhere with it? You know what I mean? It's like anything in life, like a job. You can't show up one day and be like, well, that wasn't for me, you know, and then you're gone the next. I mean, I'm sure people do it, but,
right.
But you know, it's, you gotta be there. You gotta be consistent. And the kids are the quickest to call them out for it. You know, they know as soon as they walk in, they're like, yeah, they're not going to be back next week. Or I hope they're back, but they're not going to be back, you know?
Yeah.
So they're real quick about it. But yeah, man, like the mentorship part, it's all in the same breath. It's, I think that comes along with facilitating a lot of these conversations and facilitating like group conversations, but also like a one-on-one conversation. You know, it's I'm going to sound like a broken record, but the trust, you know, it's,
yeah.
I can't begin to be a mentor if they don't trust me.
Yeah, that's a big part.
Yeah. So, but through all the things I've done, you know, volunteer or work related with youth, it's been, I've never gone into a situation or a group or a conversation and my initial thought was, okay, how can I be a mentor to this student?
Right.
You know, it was never that. It was what do they need from me that I know I have and that I can easily give and that's easily attainable for them to receive. Because if I tell them, yeah, I've been doing this for years. I have this accolade or whatever it is. And they're like, okay, and you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
Their main concern is like, are you gonna be here for me consistently? Are you gonna care what I have to say?
Right.
And are you gonna help me get better? You know, those are kind of the three overarching questions that a lot of the students have. A lot of the same questions are those, and so, you know, I could be with a student for 3-4 years, and then. And then develop a mentor relationship. But it usually very rarely starts out that way. You
right.
know? Unless if that's like my main objective in a conversation or a group setting is okay, I'm going into this room knowing that I'm probably going to be a mentor to one or two or three students. I'll give you an example. Like, I was volunteered at our church at Hope Elam with Ignition. And that's a high school group, you know. And so their ages are probably like 15 to 16, 17, 18. But going into that, it was, okay, I know I'm going to be a mentor now in this group because I knew some of the guys initially, but a lot of them I didn't know. But I was kind of, I don't want to say, I'll say recruited, you know, as kind of that mentor because I've worked with students at that age before. And so going into that setting, it was different because it wasn't going into a recovery setting where it was like, I know these students are hurting. I know they're trying to recover. I know they're trying to get better from something. Instead, it was, okay, I know they're probably still hurting. You know, they're still students and still dealing with some heavy stuff. But it wasn't necessarily from a recovery aspect. It was from, like, a youth group aspect, you know, and, like, a life group aspect.
Right.
And so now it was like, okay, I'm coming in, and I'm several years removed from high school now. So how can I play as mentor to these high schoolers now, and what advice what could I possibly give them right now in this moment that they can take for free? So going into that, it was mentorship, but 9 times out of 10 it's never going into it as I'm going to be a mentor. How could I be a mentor?
Right.
What steps do I need to take to be a mentor? It was always, how can I be here for these kids in this moment?
No, that's real.
You know, so, and if it ends up being developing into a mentorship, then so be it. And I'm happy to do that and be there for them that way. But if they just needed me to listen every week, then I'll just be there as a listener, you know?
No, absolutely. So you know, Austin, before I get you out of here, man, I'll be mindful of your time.
Yeah.
What do you do to manage your mental health? Just one thing. What's that one thing that's your go-to?
Yeah.
To keep you in line and focus on that.
See, that's a good question because the idea of mental health is relatively new. You know, at least taking care of it is relatively new. So I was going to therapy for a little bit, and it was my first experience with therapy. This was probably 3 years ago now. My first experience with it, and I was going into it, you know, I don't have a clear objective, you know, but I know this is therapy's a good thing for people, and I want to be involved with it. And so I was going on a few times, and then I went one session, and my therapist actually fell asleep on me, mid conversation.
You're lying.
I'm telling him something, bro. He's sitting in his comfy chair, just nodded off.
That's mad disrespect.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop talking. So I stopped talking and I left, and I'm like, if that's what therapy is, I don't want to do it now, you know? But like, I know that's not fair to put it all in the same pool, you know?
Right.
And nor do I want to, but that was my last experience with therapy. And so it's like, I know I want to get back into it, but it was such a bad experience. I'm like, I don't know if that was for me, man, but I recently heard, you know, it's a good thing to kind of shop around and find, absolutely, find a counselor and find a therapist. So I need to get back into it. But fast forward, you know, I find a lot of comfort, find a lot of peace and prayer, obviously. And, you know, whether that's just like a 10-minute prayer or a 10-second prayer or an hour prayer, you know, it's just spending time with God and being like, all right, man, I just went through a heavy week. Like, here's everything, you know, what do I do with it? But on top of that, you know, prayer is a good thing. Talking to God's a really good thing. But at least for me, I need something like tangible in the moment a lot of times. And so, honestly, I just go to my wife and give her a lot of things. And she's a great sounding board. I'm a sounding board for all of her things, too. So we do that. You know, I'm huge into cycling, and so that's another thing. Okay. What I do for my mental is just, I mean, I can zone out for 5-6 hours, go for 80-70 miles and zone out and just unload, you know, and just,
yeah.
I'm getting fit into it as well, but also, I'm getting my brain fit, you know, it's just like I'm like, I'm either having conversations with myself or having conversations with God in the moment, or just kind of being like, just shutting off my mind and not even thinking for right. 5 hours, you know, and going out in the middle of Iowa and middle of nowhere. And just kind of like, it's like my way of disassociating a little bit, you know, and kind of checking out. And then I get back and it's like regular scheduled program and still going, you know? So, but now I've got much more of a clear conscience and I'm like, okay, now I can go tackle what I got to tackle and take care of what I got to take care of. So, those are definitely the couple of things I do right now to
That's for real. Well, Austin, thank you so much.
And thank you. It's a good time.
For being here with me today. Everybody, thank you for joining Coffee Can't Fix Everything. Please head over to coffeecan'tfixit.com. Sign up for the newsletter. If you're experiencing any mental health concerns, please seek help. We want you to be well. Take care.